For a second day, political bombings dominate the news. The latest is in Sri Lanka, scene of a long and bloody separatist campaign by Tamil extremists. Official accounts say at least 20 were killed in this morning's rush hour blast in Colombo. Other reports put the number at 50 or more. The BBC's John Reddy is there.
There were many minibuses and cars going, taking people home from work, from the business sector of the city. It's not clear whether the bomb went off in a moving vehicle or a stationary vehicle, but police say they do think it was a car bomb. And it exploded just outside a police station, which is set back from the road a bit. The entire range of vehicles in that part of the road was completely wrecked. Bits of body were lying about everywhere, and some bits of cars were up in trees.
Some witnesses said they believe the explosion occurred in a bus, but a small Japanese-made car was ripped apart at the center of the scene. Yesterday was Remembrance Day in the British Isles, a time to remember those who died in wars. But in years to come, the people of Enniskill in Northern Ireland will recall it as a day of terror and senseless death. Dan Revive reports.
The explosion, which killed 6 men and 5 women, shocked this United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland because the mass murder was timed for the UK's Day of Remembrance, honoring the fallen soldiers of 2 world wars. Instead of the scheduled 2 minutes of silence, there was chaos in Enniskillen. Of the 63 people injured at the war memorial in that town near the Irish border, 21 are still in the hospital, 5 in very serious condition. The majority Protestants who want Northern Ireland to remain part of the United Kingdom are angry this morning. The Reverend Ian Paisley.
The time has now come when we must seriously consider taking the law into our own hands and resisting the terrorists.
For the government, Northern Ireland Secretary Tom King appealed for calm.
Anger is a very, very understandable human emotion. We all share it. I share it. But it mustn't take the form of retaliation of people taking the law into their own hands.
The British blamed the Irish Republican Army for the bomb blast, although the IRA made no claim. The police in Northern Ireland say they found and defused an even larger bomb than the one that killed 11 people yesterday. Dan Revive, CBS News, London.
One of those who survived the bomb blast was Gordon Wilson, who had just arrived in the town square with his 23-year-old daughter Marie when the bomb went off, toppling a wall on top of them.
3 or 4 times I asked her. She always said yes, she was all right. When I asked her the 5th time, are you all right, Marie? She said, Daddy, I love you very much. Those were the last words she spoke to me. She still held my hand quite firmly. I kept shouting at her, Mary, are you all right? There wasn't a reply. We were there for about 5 minutes. Someone came and pulled me out. And I said, boys, I'm all right. But for God's sake, my daughter is lying right beside me. And I don't think she's too well. And she's dead.
Actually, Marie Wilson survived until she was rushed to the hospital with brain damage and severe bleeding, but she died moments later. Wilson said he holds no grudge against the IRA and will pray for them. The Abu Nidal terrorist organization says it is holding 8 Israelis, including 3 women and 2 children, who were seized aboard their yacht off the Gaza Strip. However, the Belgian government says 5 of the purported victims are Belgians. In any event, the Abu Nidal faction threatens to kill them if Israel retaliates. More from Alan Pizzi in Tel Aviv.
Israeli officials have disputed claims by the Abu Nidal group that it has taken 8 Israeli citizens hostage on a yacht off the Israeli coast. A man claiming to represent the Abu Nidal faction claimed in Beirut that 6 adults holding joint Belgian-Israeli and French-Israeli citizenship had been seized, along with 2 Hebrew-speaking children. But the issue is murky. The Israelis said the hostages were not Israeli citizens, and the International Red Cross has denied the Abu Nidal group's claim that it has been contacted. But Israeli officials have conceded that the alleged hijacking could be an attempt to upset the Arab League summit taking place today in Amman, Jordan. Israeli Defense Minister Yitzhak Rabin told reporters,
"The world has to learn and relearn the real meaning of this kind of terrorism that in indiscriminate way tries to undermine anything positive that might exist in this part of the world."
Israeli officials are said to be operating under the assumption that something has happened, but have declined to say if they would assist Belgium in the matter. Alan Pizzi, CBS News, Tel Aviv.
The Abu Nidal hijack claim and last night's Iranian rocket attack on Baghdad, which reportedly killed 11 women and children, are both seen as efforts to unsettle Arab leaders at that emergency summit in Amman, at which they're exploring ways to end the long Iran-Iraq war. As the Supreme Court meets today to hear arguments on the constitutionality of executing teenage criminals, one of its 9 seats remains vacant. At the White House, efforts continue to fill it now that nominee number 2, Douglas Ginsburg, has withdrawn. Jacqueline Adams reports.
California Appellate Court Judge Anthony Kennedy discussed the Supreme Court nomination with Chief of Staff Howard Baker in meetings here in Washington yesterday, and White House officials confirmed that he is the leading contender for President Reagan's 3rd nomination. But Kennedy has a big problem. Though he's considered a conservative jurist, he's apparently not conservative enough for some Justice Department officials and North Carolina Senator Jesse Helms, who's threatened to filibuster his nomination. That's one reason why administration officials are continuing to float other names. Among them, Judges William Wilkins of South Carolina and Ralph Winter of Connecticut. Conservative opposition to Judge Kennedy is also the reason why the president will not announce his next nominee today. Officials here want to consult once again with key senators before making their final recommendations to the president. They hope he can make an announcement by midweek. Jacqueline Adams, CBS News, The White House.
It's been raining in parts of the 14-state southeast region where forest fires have ravaged more than 500 square miles, sending clouds of smoke as far north as Boston. 2 people have died fighting the fires. After 3 weeks of chaos in financial capitals, the world's central bank chiefs have gathered in Basel, Switzerland, for talks aimed at heading off more turmoil. The agenda is secret, the talks are behind closed doors, and the bankers are saying little to reporters like the BBC's Jeremy Bowen.
The collapsing dollar is dominating the agenda here in Basel. The Western economic powers have said to be dismayed by indications that Washington is prepared to accept another fall in the dollar in an attempt to stave off a recession in the U.S. Now, the indications here are what the central bankers from Europe and Japan are likely to be saying to their American counterpart, Mr. Greenspan of the Fed, is that they believe that a much better idea would be to take firm and fast action to cut the American budget deficit.
That Washington budget summit today enters its 3rd week, with White House and congressional negotiators conceding they still can't agree on all details of a $23 billion deficit reduction package. Republican Senator Pete Domenici says it's almost there.
It isn't the greatest package, but indeed, when you consider the polarization that exists, it's getting very close.
The dollar declined further today overseas. Gold is up about $3, and on Wall Street, where program trading resumed this morning, the Dow is down nearly 33 points. It's 7:10.